Welcome to the Arrowhead Addict Podcast, Tuesday edition. I am Sterling Holmes, no Matt Connor, as Matt Connor is heading off to Scandinavia. He does have that Viking vibe, so it really does fit him. So instead of Matt Connor, we're joined by Daniel Harms. Daniel Harms, you can follow him on Twitter at inharmsway19. You can check out all of his great work at RGR Football. Daniel, how you doing?
Oh, man. I was running around before we got to this. Like, I think I jumped on right 1 minute before we started to go live. So I'm doing all right. You know, a little frazzled. You're probably going to hear a little bit of Shark Tale in the background because my daughter is eating some dinner and watching a movie while I do this. So, but otherwise, I'm fantastic.
Is that the movie with Will Smith?
It is the movie with Will Smith.
Oh, hell yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Great. It's a great tale, if you will. But want to shout out to Caesars Sportsbook. If you guys want to do us a huge solid, if you like this podcast, you want to support this podcast, if you want to keep having great guests like Daniel Harms on this podcast, go to Caesars Sportsbook. Use code ARROWFULL. That is ARROWFULL. And get your first bet on Caesars up to $1,250 on any sport. This offer is only available for new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for the full terms of the offer. Again, that is code ARROWFULL at Caesars Sportsbook. But let's get into it. Some big news I want to talk about. You may have heard it already. DeAndre Hopkins. I know a lot of listeners are probably saying, DeAndre Hopkins, haven't we heard all the storylines from it? Maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but frankly, that's the only news that's really out there. We have that, right. We have OTAs, we have Edge, and we have some other stuff that Daniel and I will get to, but I want to start with DeAndre Hopkins, released officially from the Arizona Cardinals. I guess first, let's start there. What was your initial take on Hopkins being released?
I figured at least that was going to happen after the draft. I was like, there's no way he's going to be on the books for them. Like, it doesn't make any sense in terms of playing for them. They want to completely kind of reset everything. There's going to be a brand new regime, you know, this year, head coach, and they want to kind of get a feel for the young players on the roster. And it makes sense to get DeAndre out of the way so that they can do that. And also because at the very least, I think he still wants a chance to win a Super Bowl, and that's not going to happen in Arizona for quite a long time, I would think. So it made sense to me after, like I said, no one traded for him, but the circumstances of his release were a little bit interesting in terms of, you know, he, after the draft, said, I don't want to be anywhere else. Obviously, after all of the podcast stints where he's at all the other places that he did want to be, in fact. So when you have all of that in the air, it made more sense than not that he just wasn't going to play for the Arizona Cardinals this year. Now, whether that's going to be a whole revamp in Arizona in terms of like Kyler Murray not being there next year, that's something else, that an entire discussion entirely. But yeah, like I said, I wasn't too surprised that he was released, just more of the abouts when hearing that both the Bills and the Chiefs were close to trading for him. But that didn't end up getting ironed out.
Yeah, and I've been seeing some reports. Obviously, the contract was the big holdup. Chiefs supposedly were more interested. They wanted to offer him a Donovan Smith-esque contract, is what I saw on Twitter. That's surprising because I'm pretty sure DeAndre Hopkins would have ripped that up and said, kick rocks, pal. I think Odell Beckham Jr.'s contract has really been the sticking point, if you will. You know how Deshaun Watson, that contract is the contract that all of these quarterbacks outside of Mahomes have really looked towards, right? Look at all that guaranteed money. Well, Odell Beckham Jr. is a guy who has been very good at times, but he's been perpetually injured over the past few years, coming off of a major injury. A lot of concerns, especially with his age. So you're looking at DeAndre Hopkins. There's no reason why he should take less than Odell Beckham Jr. You're right. He's been more productive. He's been better. He's been more consistent. Frankly, probably been healthier. I mean, the 6 games he missed was because of suspension. I don't know why he would take less, but I also don't know what his market even looks like.
So I think that the Donovan Smith contract talks were more about the up to number, not necessarily the small amount that Donovan Smith was at, you know, was guaranteed on signing, things like that. I think it was more about incentive based, which even for a DeAndre Hopkins would probably be more about 6, 7, first, and then all of those buildups into maybe 10, 15, however much it ends up being. But regardless, after, like you said, after the Odell Beckham Jr. contract, that kind of tabled most of those upfront smaller number talks. Like, and I would imagine that even if DeAndre Hopkins wants to win a Super Bowl, he's not going to want to do it for a team that only incentivizes most of his contract. He's going to want a little bit more up front. And for a guy who's, again, trying to not only get that last contract, he probably wants a little bit of stability as well, not just a one-year type of contract, but maybe 2 to 3 years. That's a commitment for an over 30-year-old receiver that teams like maybe the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs don't necessarily want to commit with. Especially for the Chiefs, the last 2 years, they are drafting two receivers on day two early in the second round. You bring in Kadarius Toney, who, yes, he's been often injured the last couple of years, but he's still young. And you have a plethora of young receivers in Kansas City. So you might not want to commit yourself to a receiver who, again, is going to want 2 to 3 years there and kind of stunt some of the growth you're seeing. But at the same time, you can argue that Rashee Rice's best skill set is a lot of what DeAndre Hopkins does well. So you have to kind of find this happy medium of, well, you want a little bit of stability. We want our young players to grow. We got to find a place in the middle. This is obviously strictly talking about if you were to sign with the Chiefs, how we're going to make that work. You know, you come to Kansas City, you have a great chance of winning a Super Bowl. I mean, they just won one. I mean, without the receiving core, without DeAndre Hopkins. So
hell, MVS was the best wide receiver for a game when Juju went out.
And everybody got hurt in that game. Kadarius Toney got hurt. Juju got hurt. It was we saw Sky Moore being played the most snaps of his entire career in the AFC Championship game. I mean, this was completely different. So yeah, they were able to beat the Bengals in the AFC Championship game without anybody outside of MVS. And honestly, I want to see the Chiefs use MVS more like that. He was great in that game, and they used him a little bit differently, I mean, out of necessity, but you still had to. So I like that MVS a little bit more than everywhere else that he was used this year, or last year, excuse me. But yeah, so DeAndre is an interesting topic of discussion. There's a couple other places, Detroit, Baltimore, I think New England, that are probably going to be out there, the Jets as well, because, you know, why not? You have maybe 2 years with Aaron Rodgers, go all in. Who cares about this at this point? Just figure it out. So there's going to be other teams out there maybe throwing a little bit more money at him than the Chiefs will be able to offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Very quickly, before I go back to DeAndre Hopkins, I'm seeing some folks in the chat talking about how they would like to see the Chiefs start throttling teams, start blowing teams out. And I just want to say how far we've come from Right. Let's hope we make the playoffs to let's win a playoff game to let's win a Super Bowl to let's just go 20-0 and dominate and just completely start to finish. Don't give teams a chance. It is crazy how far we've come just looking at this iteration of the Chiefs era. But I do want to go back to DeAndre Hopkins. If it's a one-year deal, and you mentioned, right, Rashee Rice, the skill set, all of that, yeah. I think Rashee Rice could be a great jump ball winner, if you will, downfield threat. He has a 41.5-inch vertical, being 6'1". That's very much tantalizing. But the issue I have, I wouldn't even say an issue. Rookie wide receivers in a Chiefs system don't thrive. They don't get the opportunity. Even with Sky Moore, I think – you maybe wanted to see him more. I mean, he was impactful in limited action on the field. You look at the PFF numbers, they were better than George Pickens, but he didn't have the opportunity of George Pickens. Well, this year he probably will. Yeah. So he's probably not going to see the field a ton this year anyway, unless it's by necessity. So a one-year deal for DeAndre Hopkins, I'm all in. The reason being, the only way you get DeAndre Hopkins here on a one-year deal, Chris Jones extension. We're going to touch on that a little bit later on in this show, but I'm all in if that means Chris Jones is getting extended. You're bringing in DeAndre Hopkins. The only way that happens, though, is if Clark Hunt is willing to pay a lot of money out of pocket. That's a cash issue, not a cap issue.
Exactly. It's a cash issue. Yeah.
Do you think Clark Hunt's going to be willing to do that. He's already done that a decent amount. He's not the, I'm not saying he's poor by any means, but he's not the richest owner in football, right? He's not a Walton, okay? He's not the richest owner in football, and he's been pretty generous when it comes to giving these upfront contracts and turning them into bonuses and having to pay out of pocket. Do you think he's willing to do that again for DeAndre Hopkins?
I don't think so, and the biggest reason I don't is because of what happened last year. They won a Super Bowl without a number one, quote unquote, number one wide receiver. And that was, in my opinion, the reasoning for last year. They wanted to see what they could do with putting together a wide receiver group that all have different skill sets that all do different things well. And I think that that is what they're more looking towards right now, especially with the way they distribute the football. Travis Kelce is obviously the one, but they were distributing the football everywhere. And that's why Sky Moore had, you know, 267 yards last year total, because they had a plethora of players that fit what they wanted to do. Obviously, you still had Mecole Hardman at that point as well, playing for different stretches while hurt. Justin Watson playing starting snaps for a good chunk of the season. But again, all of these guys are doing different things well, and they're kind of accelerating the offensive growth and Patrick Mahomes' growth to become not just a big play threat, but someone who distributes the football everywhere. I would love to see Chris Jones get an extension. I would love to see them make some cash room to bring in a DeAndre Hopkins, because while for 1 year, his veteran leadership in that room as a guy who does have the best hands in the NFL, that's not a joke or anything. He still does.
Not hyperbole.
Absolutely not. It would be a lot of fun to see that different skill set, because the receiver that everyone had, Patrick Mahomes had, was Tyreek Hill, a completely different opposite skill set. I'm going to get open. I'm going to burn people down the field, and I'm just going to run away from everybody. DeAndre Hopkins is like, I don't have the wheels anymore. I don't really create a ton of separation. But one thing I will do is I will catch football no matter where it is. I don't care if my hand gets on it. If you're on me, I don't really care. It's a completely different skill set. So I'd like to see the Chiefs lean into that a little bit more, because that would, again, use Patrick Mahomes' ability to throw the football at all parts of the field into some contested situations. Maybe he gets a little more comfortable with that, because really, if they're not going to let you throw the ball down the field and take the top off a ton, you're going to find more condensed space to work with underneath, especially on the outside. And I think we saw that with Juju Smith-Schuster last year, where he was like, okay, I have one-on-one on the outside, and I can get the ball out quickly if I throw it back shoulder to a receiver that I trust to do that with and catch that with. Rashee Rice might develop into that, but I think you can argue DeAndre Hopkins would easily come in and be able to do that 3 or 4 times a game. So yes, I think that I would like to see it happen. I don't think that Clark Hunt's going to do it, mostly because of what the offense did last year. And now you're just adding more youth. You're adding more talent. Again, I believe that this is the most talented group front to back at wide receiver that the Chiefs have ever had under Patrick Mahomes. That's my opinion.
Bold take. It's a bold take. I think we have a lot of wait and see. I think you're maybe you might be more optimistic than I am. I don't think it's a necessarily bad group. I think there's a lot of wide receiver threes in this group. I think Sky Moore, I'm very, very much excited about, but I don't see wide receiver one necessarily from Sky Moore. But again, I don't think the Chiefs need a wide receiver one necessarily. We saw what they did. Juju Smith-Schuster had a very good year last year. Very solid. No one's confusing Juju Smith-Schuster for a wide receiver one. He's a wide receiver two. That is what he's been. That's what he's been the majority of his career. Even his best year, he was wide receiver two behind Antonio Brown. I guess where I'm at here is, if it's a 1 year deal, it's not my money. That means Chris Jones gets extended, and that's all coming out of Clark Hunt's upfront money. I'm fine. But when you get into a 2 year deal, a 3 year deal, I am completely out on DeAndre Hopkins, because what it comes down to is that is taking money away from extensions to Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Nick Bolton, Legarius Sneed. If I had my druthers, I'm taking any of those guys over a wide receiver. Mahomes makes every wide receiver better.
Yeah.
He's not playing defense. He's not making the defense better, right? Chris Jones makes some guys in the defense better, but not to the same extent that Mahomes does. Mahomes can't affect that. So where I'm at, make the other spots better. Focus on what Mahomes makes better. You don't have to put as much emphasis there. 2 year, 3 year deal, I'm out. I will also say this. AJ Green, it was age 31 when he fell off. Julio Jones, age 31 when he fell off. DeAndre Hopkins is about to be 31. Now, I get it. I get it. It could be the outlier. Could be the outlier. But you saw this with Julio Jones and AJ Green. They started to miss games. One reason or the other. DeAndre Hopkins is now missing games, playing 19 games in the past 2 years. Some's injury, some suspension, still makes me a little bit worried. Because if you look at the stat lines, especially of like Julio Jones, while he was missing games, the games he was active, he still looked pretty darn good. He still put up those numbers, but it never translated again to a full, healthy, dominant season. That makes me concerned.
Yeah, I guess I understand that, but you're not really asking DeAndre Hopkins to be a dominant player, in my opinion. At least that's how I view it coming here. Because again, he is on the end part of his career, and he is over 30 now. And the thing that he does well is not putting a ton of stress on his body. Like, it just doesn't. He catches, I mean, yes, through contact, but it's more of guys around him. Like, it doesn't bother him at all. He doesn't really care. I don't think he's over really dunking on guys as much as he used to. That athletic part of his game definitely has taken a hit. But I think you're asking him to come in and just kind of be kind of what like Travis Kelce is to an extent. Take a little bit of defensive gravity. As much as you're going to get paid here, yes, you're going to still have some good games, but you're going to open up the field for Sky Moore. You're going to open up the field for MVS and Kadarius Toney, and maybe even vice versa. Maybe Kadarius Toney, if he plays healthy, can open up the field. Because I think that if DeAndre Hopkins comes to Kansas City, he's a slot receiver. He's not playing the X. He's not playing the Z. You have your Z and Kadarius Toney. You have your X and MVS who's going to stretch the field. DeAndre Hopkins can use the slot position to just destroy defenses underneath. Just
you in this power slot. I've never seen anyone more on the power slot than Harms.
It's because that's what day and age it is. These, and plus, as a 31-year-old receiver, do you really want him playing the X right now and being up against physical, more physical corners? No, I want him to be having free releases so he doesn't have to worry about that. But a big slot in this offense would just be a lot more fun. I'll be very honest with you. I think it'd be a lot of fun to just bully teams underneath linebackers. You can't really do much against DeAndre Hopkins as a linebacker or as a safety. I'd love to see that matchup. I really, or slot corner. Imagine DeAndre Hopkins going up against a tiny slot corner. Like, that just doesn't work out for them as much. So I guess I think that fit in this offense specifically is something that I really look forward to hoping and imagining in my head.
We're also talking about putting a spoiler on a Porsche. we're talking about putting brand new rims on a Ferrari. I mean, because seriously, right now where the Chiefs sit, they're the favorites to run it back and win the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's not a hyperbole. They are the favorites to win the Super Bowl again. Adding DeAndre Hopkins moves the needle a bit, but guess what? They're still going to be the favorites. If they don't land DeAndre Hopkins, guess what? They're still going to be the favorites. That's where the Chiefs currently sit. I don't think it's a necessity. I think you and I are on the same page here. One-year deal? Sure. We're all in.
Absolutely.
Two, three-year deal. I think that's where we have to draw the line in the sand and say, we are out. It is not worth it. My final thoughts on DeAndre Hopkins before I get your final thoughts. I don't see him taking a quote-unquote team-friendly deal. He's not been about that in his life. He's not been about that in his NFL career. Why would he do that now? Has he made over $100 million in his NFL career? You bet your ass he has. But guess what he said? I still want to get paid, baby. And guess what? He's going to. Some team, again, maybe not $23 million per year that was his current contract, but some team will give him around an OBJ money. He will be 31. There's no such thing as a prove-it deal for a guy who was averaging 80-plus yards per game last year when he was playing. I don't see him doing it because this might be his last chance for a multi-year contract. He's taking the
money. That's what it is. I think he's going to put getting paid above winning a Super Bowl. We've kind of heard some rumors about that possibly being the case. And honestly, I'm all for players getting paid. Dude, get what you got to get. I don't care what you got to do. If you don't want to win a Super Bowl that bad, that's on you. That's on you, okay? Like, that's your decision. You don't want to, that's fine. But I think a team like the Detroit Lions, which obviously have Super Bowl aspirations, so cap space to do it would make a lot of sense too. But they're realistically going to the NFC makes a lot of sense for DeAndre Hopkins. Makes a lot of sense because the Eagles, okay? The Eagles, that's it. That's the team you got to beat. You got to find one team in the NFC that may be able to knock them off in a playoff game. That's pretty much what you're looking at. So you don't have to go through all the different teams in the AFC if that's what he's going after, if he wants to try to get paid as well as possibly get to the Super Bowl in the NFC. It makes more sense. But I think that everything stands as it is. DeAndre Hopkins will be on a team that is not the Kansas City Chiefs in, I would say, maybe a week or two. But at the end of the day, the Chiefs will be – just fine because, like you said earlier, Patrick Mahomes elevates the wide receivers. That's one thing we weren't 100% sure. Like, we were like 95% sure he could do it. And last year he was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to take my game to another level and then win a Super Bowl on a bum ankle, just throwing the ball to everybody. It doesn't matter.
Oh, you want Marcus Kemp in a clutch situation, crunch time? Who's it going to? Marcus bleeping Kemp.
That's a he great gets it done, baby.
And by the way, give Marcus Kemp a lot of credit in the world. I mean, yeah, they stay ready. They stay ready. All right. Chris Jones. We all want Chris Jones here. Chris Jones has said he wants to play here. We hear that from a lot of players, but for Chris Jones, I believe it, right? I think a lot of players are always like, hey, I want to play in one team forever. I want to stay here. I want to be here. Chris Jones does seem like he wants to be here. He's walking that fine line of legacy where he could be a Hall of Famer and do it all in one team, which I think is very, very important. Yeah. I think when you look back in the pantheon of players, a lot of times you look at the guys who played for one team. Chris Jones has an opportunity to do that. But he also understands he wants to be, in his words, the second highest paid defensive lineman, right? So Aaron Donald's at 31.666, repeating, of course. So he's not getting there. No one's been close to Aaron Donald money.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Simmons is currently the second highest paid interior defensive lineman at 23.5. Okay. Now, the holdup, at least in my eyes, is Quinnen Williams. What does Quinnen Williams get? And to you, Daniel, is that what the holdup is? Are they waiting for the Quinnen Williams deal to get done?
I don't think so personally, because I mean, I like Quinnen Williams. I think he's fantastic. Do you think he's going to break 26? Do you think he's going to break 26? Because I don't.
I think he gets 25. I think he at least gets 25. Fine. Yeah,
that's fine. I think Chris Jones is getting 27, 28 regardless. So I personally don't think that they are waiting for that. The number for me, like I said, it's about $28 million a year for Chris Jones. If you want to be the second highest paid defensive tackle, that's probably going to happen no matter what, because I don't think Quinnen Williams is touching it. And you can really just not have to worry about that personally. I don't know what the holdup is, but there's something going on with what they're doing right now. But the Chiefs typically like to wait a little bit for these bigger ones, at least in recent memory, till a little bit before training camp or during training camp.
Well, Chris Jones signed last time in July, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm not mistaken, that was the last time Chris Jones got that contract signed, was July. So again, this is not abnormal.
No.
I'm not saying it's abnormal.
No.
I'm just wondering if they are waiting, not the Chiefs necessarily, but Chris Jones. I'm wondering if Chris Jones and his camp, his agent is waiting to see what he gets and say, hey, so let's just say for a hypothetical, Quinnen gets 26, right? Let's just say he gets 26 AAV. Chris Jones is probably saying, give me 27. Whether it's a million more, half a million more, a dollar more. I do think there's something to Chris Jones wanting to have that cachet, right? That cachet of, hey, I'm the second highest paid interior defensive lineman in the NFL. I think there's something to that.
Yeah, him. I could see him waiting on that part. The Chiefs, I don't think are, but I can absolutely see Chris doing that and just trying to be like, just give me 1 million more than him. That's all I want. And that might also be his way of being a team friendly deal, because if the Chiefs came up and said, hey, we'll give you 29 right now. Obviously, I don't think Quinnen Williams is going to break 26. I really don't. And that's 3 million more. So this could also be his own way of kind of being a little team friendly to an extent, where they might just be wanting to give him like right underneath that threshold for Aaron Donald. And he's just like, let's just wait and see, because I could make a little bit less and you guys can have a little bit more to throw around. If we're talking legacy here, already a multiple Super Bowl winning defensive tackle. He's just won his first All-Pro, first team All-Pro defensive tackle, I believe. If he didn't, if I'm not mistaken, was that right about that? I think he did, because I don't think Aaron Donald got it, so it had to have been Chris Jones. Yeah. And then they think he's probably going to win another one, maybe two, in his stint in Kansas City. Yeah, I think that he definitely could be waiting a little bit. So I agree with you on that front for sure.
Shout out to Doug in Kansas for the super chat. Says great show, Arrowhead Addict, and great guest. See, look at you, Harms. You're already making friends in the Arrowhead Addict community. Going back to Chris Jones, what do you think a three-year deal, four-year deal, what do you think the years on that contract is going to be?
I think four. I think four is where you're looking at, because five might be that point where, okay, maybe he's declining. Okay, maybe he's declining. And the Chiefs might have a little bit more reservation for what he might be doing around there in the money making department. I do think 4 years is probably where it lands. I wouldn't be shocked to see them go five. But again, we're talking about he's 20, 28, 29 years old. So we are approaching that not necessarily edge or cliff for Chris Jones. I think these different players can differ. Like, I think Aaron Donald next year is going to be fantastic again. And I don't have any reservations about that. He's probably not going to get injured, but the injuries might start to come for Chris Jones. He's been very lucky.
Don't you dare even put that into existence. I'm not going to go to you and kick your ass because you would destroy me in a fight, but I would at least try and go for your shins or something. No, don't bring that into the world.
It's unfortunate, but it is part of the conversation. And 4 years from now, what, he's going to be 20 or 33, but 33 years old. So yeah, I think that makes a whole lot of sense for them to go four and say, look, we'll revisit this maybe halfway through, depending on how you're playing. That seems to be makes the most sense to me, but they'll have to be some guarantees built in for Chris Jones to help him feel more compensated for his time.
Last thing on Chris Jones, any chance that his pushing for Frank Clark actually makes a difference? Yes. I'm assuming the Chiefs would come back to him and say, hey pal, if you want Frank Clark that badly, that money is coming out of your paycheck. Let me ask you, any chance Frank Clark is back here in Kansas City? Obviously there's going to always be a chance, right? He's still in the NFL. Yeah. I don't care that the Chiefs put out a tweet saying, thank you for all you've done, Frank Clark. We saw that happen with Darius Slay. We've seen multiple times around the NFL players say or teams say goodbye to said player. Next thing you know, they're back in said uniform. Is this pushing for Frank? Does this mean anything to you?
I love it. I also think that it means that Chris has been talking to the organization. Otherwise, you know, I think that they all wanted to find a way to make it work. And with his current contract, the way that it was, they didn't have enough and couldn't find a middle ground. But now that he's a free agent, things are a little bit different. I do think that because of how the money they still owe him, it makes it a little bit complicated to bring him back. But I do think that, one, Chris Jones saying that he wants you back is enough to at least visit the conversation, to have it. And I do think that there's a pretty decent chance as of right now that he is back. One of the veteran defensive ends that's hanging out there right now is going to be in Kansas City before camp. I just don't know if it's going to be him, Carlos Dunlap, or possibly somebody else. Like a Yannick Ngakoue, maybe. Somebody could be, I do believe, a defensive end is going to be joining the Kansas City before training camp.
So I think Yannick Ngakoue is the absolute dream scenario for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to cost too much money. I'm shocked he's not signed yet. Yeah. He's 28 years old. The fewest amount of sacks he's ever had in a season is 8. He is just perpetually consistent, right? I expect Ngakoue, although I will say he's been on, what, 4 teams already in his young NFL career. There has to be a reason behind that. But I'm still going to assume he's going to be a little bit out of the Chiefs' price range. Going through the 2023 NFL free agent draft trackers, here are the list of edge players still out there. Leonard Floyd, Frank Clark, Robert Quinn, Ngakoue, Jadeveon Clowney, Melvin Ingram, Justin Houston, Carlos Dunlap, Anthony Barr, Jason Pierre-Paul. I mean, there's not a great list of guys. There's still a decent amount of dudes out there. Same time, how bad do the Chiefs actually need a veteran edge rusher? You know, Frank Clark is not brought back. Carlos Dunlap is not brought back. But the Chiefs did bring in Charles Omenihu. They did bring in FAU in the first round. The only issue is Charles going to get suspended? If so, how many games? If so, is it at the beginning of the season? Now with FAU, right? Kind of the same boat. Rookies typically take about halfway through the year before they really start making an impact at edge. We saw it last year with Aiden Hutchinson, Carl Loftus, Kayvon Thibodeau. So I'm not worried about the long-term edge, you know, playoff time of this group, but I am a little nervous, like, through the first 6 weeks. They seem like there's a lot of concern there. Where's your concern level here? Do they need another veteran edge?
Yeah, I think that they do. Personally, one that can really help FAU develop as a run defender. That's the one area of his game that he really does need a lot of help with. And obviously pass rush in the NFL will take some time to learn his different counters, but his bag is really full of pass rush moves. And he's got one of the best plans, and maybe not necessarily plans, but tool bags, if you will, of pass rush moves that came out of the draft, in my opinion. But he is not a very good run defender. And if you look at Charles Omenihu, he's not the best run defender. Karlaftis, who was supposed to come out and kind of be a better run defender, had his ups and downs. He wasn't a consistently good run defender. He had some problems moving with zone runs and moving laterally and getting pushed that way instead of vertically. Very good in the dirt and getting not pushed backwards, more pushed horizontally, where it was his problem. And then Mike Dana, who's in a contract year, who I believe, you know, we all know the late great Therese Paylor, the contract year is undefeated, but how much is a backup defensive end going to contribute in a run defense standpoint? I like Mike Dana, but is he going to help develop FAU in that regard? I do think a veteran pass rusher like a Frank Clark, who his best attribute over the past couple of years was his run defense and then being able to turn it on in the postseason, just kind of what it was. And I do believe legacy in that department as well will play into this, because he's not too far away from leading the NFL in postseason sacks. I play for Kansas City, and you're going to have yourself another couple opportunities to continue to set that record.
I'm so shocked why they could not come to a agreement here, because it had to be Frank Clark foremost, because the Chiefs would have made sense to try and restructure that contract, right? It made more sense to restructure. Frank Clark's 29. Yeah. I get where he's coming from. He probably thinks he can get one last multi-year deal. Again, he's 29. We like to think he's 33 based on what he's done here, right? It seems like he seems like he's ancient, but he's 29, right? But in my opinion, he is now that Carlos Dunlap, Melvin Ingram. But again, I always understand the player saying, I still think I'm a starter. I still think I have enough left in the tank to deserve a multi-year deal. I'm only 29. I'm not the same age as Dunlap or Melvin Ingram. I get where Frank Clark is coming from, at least where I'm assuming he's coming from, okay? But we'll wait and see. Whatever his market shows is what it shows. If it's only a one-year deal, if there are only one-year options and they're not drastically different as far as playing time, like if he's not going to be a starter on a team compared to just a rotational piece here, I bet he says, you know what? I'm coming back. There is that legacy involved. There's no reason for him to start over in Detroit. There's no reason for him to start over on the Bears, right? Like, it makes sense if it's a relatively similar contract and similar amount of snap share for him to come back here.
And that's the thing. You can always put those incentives in. So percentage of the snaps. If you start playing more, you get more money. Like, that's something that he's going to be considering at this point. Like you said, there is not a team out there that is going to be handing, in my opinion, Frank Clark a starting level contract. Hey, you're going to be our defensive end too. It's in the end of May now, going into June. Most of these teams have their starting defensive ends done. And Frank is now at the point, like you said, where he's trying to figure out his own body functions. Like, he's missed games because of his body, and they wouldn't let him play. Last year, he played better as a pass rusher when he was down to, 255. That might be just where he's going to have to play from now on, and that's a rotational pass rusher kind of guy who can give you some defensive run-stopping snaps, but at the end of the day, he's probably going to be more of a postseason stretch run kind of player that I think fits very well in Kansas City, funny enough.
Going to the running back room, Isaiah Pacheco, I'm excited by him. I'm very excited by him. And this is not to say I'm not thrilled, but I don't see him ever being a three-down back. I don't see him as a bell cow, if you will. And it's nothing necessarily against him. His PFF numbers as far as pass protection were miserable last year. Miserable. Not saying he doesn't try or doesn't want to.
No.
He puts the effort in. It just wasn't good. Now he was a rookie. That is one of the toughest things for a running back to transition to from college to the NFL. I get all that. But in today's NFL, why have one guy do everything when you can have Jerick McKinnon and Pacheco? You could have, you know, Prince and Pacheco. Have one guy excel in one spot, one guy excel in the other thing. There's no reason to have a quote-unquote Christian McCaffrey bell cow back for the Kansas City Chiefs. End of the day, you're not saving any roster spots. You still have two running backs behind Isaiah McCaffrey or Christian McCaffrey. You're still going to have two running backs behind Isaiah Pacheco, right? You're not saving any roster spots here. It doesn't matter how you get to those numbers, if it's one dude or three dudes, just get there. I'm saying let Pacheco focus on first and second down and let whoever wants to be the third down back focus there. What do you see for Pacheco? Does he ever become a bell cow back? Or do you think he kind of is what he is, which is a very valuable first and second down dude?
Yeah, this is exactly what the talk was coming out for Pacheco. He's got his limitations, and there's a reason here. He was a senior coming out of Rutgers, having some issues behind the offensive line there. And the vision still it's spotty at times, but in this offense where there's space to run, it's perfect for him. Let him run in the space. Like, they just get him into the right area, give him like 2 or 3 yards of a gap, and then just say, hey, go run somebody over. Like, that's what you do best. You don't have to worry about pass protection. And yeah, he flashed it pretty decently in the screen game and some of the open areas in the passing game. But at the end of the day, I want somebody else taking those snaps personally. I don't think that he's not going to offer you a ton. And there's a reason that Jerick McKinnon was playing a ton of snaps down the stretch when the offensive line had some protection issues and some injury.
Orlando Brown Jr.
Yeah. So there's a reason that, you know, he's also back on the roster, Jerick McKinnon, because his pass protection, regardless of his PFF grade, by the way, doesn't make any sense. His pass protection is fantastic. And his technique standpoint, and not just a willingness, but the physicality for an undersized quote unquote running back, is really, really good. And I think that everyone obviously wants Denarik Prince to be a thing on this roster. I don't think he makes it this year. He's pretty much a Isaiah Pacheco one for one, in my opinion, almost the exact same player. So it makes a lot of sense to have him on the practice squad. If something happens, you can say, hey, guess what? We have a guy who does a lot of the exact same things as Isaiah Pacheco, and we can just kind of rotate him in there off the practice squad if need be. And, you know, Clyde's not going to be in Kansas City next year, but as the third running back, second running back, however it shakes out for the team, I still think they might want to save McKinnon as much as they possibly can. The wear and the injuries, I mean, for really both of those guys, they're just going to have to probably trade off snaps here and there to try to figure that out. But I do think that, one, it's also a contract year for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So if he can be half as efficient, not even half, but as efficient as he was last year before he got hurt, then I'm pretty excited about the possibility of what the running back room looks like. You look at their wide receivers, tight ends, and their running backs, all three rooms are productive, and they're all going to do a lot. Like, the tight ends are going to rotate in and out. They're going to play a lot. Tight ends or the wide receivers, they're all going to play a lot. Everybody is just all up in here. My dog is trying.
The Harms House is getting into it. Dogs.
Yeah. My dog is all over the place.
It's a party in the Harms House.
Having a fun time. But yeah, they like to use all of them a lot of different ways. So everyone's going to contribute.
I want to talk about, what do you look for in OTAs? The OTAs starting, right? I think it was huge that Mahomes was there. I know the talk of Lamar Jackson missing a day or two after signing that big contract. I get it. In the grand scheme of things, probably not a huge deal, but just the perception behind it, the perception of Mahomes after all these quarterbacks have signed these massive contracts. I get it. He signed his deal. Last year was the first year of his contract being actually put into use. Still, it's awesome seeing Mahomes, the leader, showing up on voluntary OTAs. That's massive. That looks incredible for the young guys. What do you take away from OTAs? What do you look for? I understand these dudes aren't in pads. I understand it's best shape of your life season. I get all that. But do you look for anything specifically?
Leadership on both sides of the football. I think that one thing that you can take away, because there's no hitting, there's no pads. You're trying to get everyone lined up and in the good positions they're supposed to be in, because those repetitions count towards this, towards training camp and into regular season, real play, preseason, all that stuff. That all contributes. The one thing you can carry in all the way through is communication and leadership. Those are the two big things I look for. So a guy like Justin Reed coming into his second season as the quote unquote leader in the secondary and the defensive room, like someone who's going to be more outspoken. We know Nick Bolton's not really an outspoken guy. Chris Jones, not necessarily a more outspoken guy. Brian Cook and Justin Reed are going to be those guys on defense, in my opinion, getting everyone lined up in the right spots in the back half with still second-year corners and a new corner, Nick Jones, and another young defensive back in Chamari Connor. This is a group that needs and really kind of depends on communication with how many different players they rotate in and out, playing in dime a lot. You're all going to be playing at some point. So this is a really good time to get communications down for that defense and being able to use, you know, Nick Bolton and Willie Gay and you know, the new guy, Drew Tranquil, who's getting green dot snaps, by the way, which I think is going to be very important for the Chiefs in the defense this year. So I really think that leadership, establishing yourself in those huddles and communication are the big things. And every snippet we get of trying to see some of the on-field play can determine how you're seeing in them in position. And that's really the really big thing that I'm looking for every time that these times of season come around.
I see in the chat someone saying DeAndre Hopkins might be going to the Patriots. There's a bill on the Patriots that Hopkins did not get along with. No, it's not Bill Belichick, but Bill O'Brien is the OC for the Patriots. That would be wild, incredible, phenomenal.
Honestly, it'd be fun.
Hilarious. I would love to see a program made by this of Bill O'Brien and DeAndre Hopkins reuniting in New England. And then Bill Belichick just trying to just thread the needle between those two dudes. That'd be very fun. Now, I don't think he goes to the Patriots because of that reason. But when it comes to Mahomes and his legacy, okay, we talked about him showing up to OTAs when he doesn't really have to. But he talked about his contract, right? He understands there's more at play than just making the most money. He makes so much money off the field. He wants to save some money for his guys. He mentioned Legarius Sneed. He mentioned Chris Jones. He mentioned Travis Kelce. But what I also found fascinating in his interview, he brought up the fact that he's walking a fine line between wanting to be player friendly, but also understanding the other quarterbacks in the NFL. This is a dude who gets it. He's trying to play both sides. He's doing a phenomenal job doing it. But what he's basically saying is he doesn't want to water down the quarterback market by saying, okay, let's just say, for example, the next quarterback, Justin Herbert, well, we're not paying you as much as Mahomes. Look at this team-friendly deal. You're not even close to making that. You're not close to being Mahomes. So if he stays at that certain number, the quarterback market is going to just plateau. Now, obviously, this offseason, we have not seen that. Look at what Geno Smith is making. Look at what Daniel Jones is making, right? Like, we haven't seen that yet. But in the future, that's the potential issue that Mahomes sees. How grown up, how mature is his viewpoint from Patrick?
It's ridiculous. Like, people, they don't understand how smart he is. He sees, hears, digests, and he gets everything. And it's still kind of pressed upon how growing up around professional athletes and his father in a baseball dugout around everybody that he did impacted him. And it impacted him more than just the physical player. It impacted him from a mental standpoint. He's like, okay, I see baseball contracts are, even back then, were astronomical. They were huge. There was still no salary cap in baseball, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe you know more about that than I do. So, no, but
they have the best players union in the history of ever. It's incredible.
So he sees all of that growing up, maybe not understanding it. He understands it now. He understood it in college. He understood all of that aspect and that side of money. So he's playing, like you said, playing both sides, but he's doing it in a way where everybody wants that from him. The other quarterbacks, he understands, not just for all the other quarterbacks, for all the other black quarterbacks too. This is a whole different regime in the NFL with the young black athletes. And he's really trying to take a step forward for that, not just for all quarterbacks, for these guys too, who they're all going to be making this generational wealth. And he's like, look, we're going to see Jalen Hurts, who just got paid. Justin Fields is another one as well, this is going to be a year the Chicago Bears figure out whether they're going to use with him. But it's a consistent thing for all of these quarterbacks and these young black athletes to make their money. So he sees this from a whole different side, and he's always trying to improve upon himself, the team, and the realm for other players like him. It's a completely mature, understood concept that I don't know if everyone was expecting or ready for when Patrick came out, and we're seeing him just be incredible. And not just on the field, off the field, what he's done with his money and his endorsements, he's just the most humble guy in the world on top of all of it. Like, I don't really understand. It's hard to fathom the situation that Chiefs fans were all in watching him, when the quarterbacks that everybody that has grown up watching, you know, Trent Green being the best in terms of a prolific passer, Alex Smith being that leader, and now you're seeing Patrick Mahomes not just leading in stats, leading off the field too. It's an incredible trajectory, and he is an incredible person being able to do it all at the same time. I'm blown away by him.
The only thing I want him to do is, because he's probably the only guy that can actually do this, has the sway, make I-70 three lanes instead of two. It's bullshit. Come on. I always say, if I ran for president, I would run on one platform. Make I-70 three lanes, okay? I feel like I would get so many votes. I mean, I-70 goes from what? like somewhere out in California all the way to
yes.
to Pittsburgh and Philly. Like, come on. Come on, I-70.
I remember I-70 when I lived in California.
See, I'm telling you, Harms, I would get so many votes. Hey, what's your foreign policy? Doesn't matter. Three lanes, I-70. Book it, baby. Like, I'm getting at least 60% of the votes. That's all I'm going to go ahead and say.
At least.
All right, before I let you get out of here, I want to talk about wide receiver 5 and 6. I think we're probably in agreement. It is going to be MVS, Sky Moore, Rashee Rice, and Kadarius Toney. Those four, those guys are safe. Okay, any order you put them in, those four dudes are safe. Now it comes down to Richie James, Justin Watson, Amir Smith-Marset. It comes down to Justin Ross. It comes down to John Ross. Comes down to probably some dudes we don't even know about yet. Where do you land on this wide receiver 5 and 6?
I'm still pretty Justin Watson proof. Like, I think that he's going to make the roster, him being back, having that connection with Patrick Mahomes, and, you know, playing last year, all those snaps, learned a ton. It makes a lot of impact, and he does all that already. So I think he's going to be the 5. And if I had to pick right now, I do think it's going to be Richie James, just because he's been in the league. And last year, if you watch what he did for that team that really was just kind of iffy on offense in the passing game, he was a reliable player for Daniel Jones, and he offers positional versatility for your special teams too. That's a big thing for that 6 spot. He can play gunner. He's going to be mostly going to be a return guy, but that kick return and punt return abilities that he has could lock him in. Now, he might be pushed by Amir Smith-Marset or Remigio, who's an undrafted free agent. He could also do that. He's a bit of more electric kind of player, small, shifty, really, really fast, things like that. So, but I think right now with the safety net that he offers as a receiver, but also from a return standpoint, he's going to be the 6.
Yeah, I see Chris Albright asked, what if they carry 7 yeah. wide receivers? Man, I can't get to 7. I know they're not carrying a fullback, but it seems like they might have 4 tight ends.
Absolutely.
I don't know what your thoughts are here. I'm kind of out on 7 wide receivers personally. Are you in the same boat, or do you think it's a legit 7 wide receiver type of year for Kansas City?
I think it very well could be. And the not keeping a fullback is what does it. And now you could carry 4 tight ends. I think they carried 4 tight ends last year, if I'm not mistaken, and they had 6 wide receivers and a fullback. So you could still feasibly do it, depending on how, and that third quarterback now is not going to take up a roster spot either. So it's definitely feasible. And I think that 7 spot is going to just come down to which receiver flashes the most if they do keep 7. But if they don't have enough evidence, it's just going to be 6 like it always is.
Yeah, I was about to say, once you get to wide receiver 5, 6, 7 anyways, a lot of times you're talking special teams more than anything else, yeah, right? Sure. So, you know, where do you get the value of the roster spot? Those 3 times they're lined up as a receiver, or is it going to be used somewhere else? I see the super chat from New Punk Rants. Thank you. Appreciate the super chat. Says the fact Mahomes isn't even his prime yet is scary. Also calling it now, Justin and John both make it on the roster, replacing Watson and James. Spicy. John Ross, I will say this, looks really damn good in OTA so far. I will say this, it's OTAs. he was drafted 1 pick before Mahomes, like we always know and always talk about that. But he's so explosive. And if you want to use him in the jet sweep role, I think it really comes down to John versus Richie almost to an extent. Because I think Kadarius Toney at this point is going to focus almost exclusively on being the best wide receiver 1 he can, or at least an outside receiver, if you will, right? Yeah. At some point, the Chiefs had to say, hey, Tyreek, we know you're our best punt returner. You're no longer returning punts.
No.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, at some point, you just say, hey, I know you're our best guy in these gadget situations, but it's not worth it. And I think Absolutely. That's what Richie James, he was brought in to be the gadget guy, the special teamer to an extent, if you will. But if John Ross can do it and he shows more, I think those two guys are fighting out. While Justin Watson Justin Ross might have a little bit more of that fight. Now, Watson provides more special team value. There's no denying that. But I keep saying Justin Watson and MVS, their skill set is very similar. We saw when MVS's snap share went down last year, it was in direct correlation to Justin Watson getting more chances on the field, right? So I feel like those two guys are a little bit redundant to an extent, although MVS doesn't play special teams. Justin Ross, if he shows out, I think he'll have a chance. I don't know if the Chiefs want to make him open. Again, that's a long road to recovery still. I'm not saying I'm holding out hope for that, but I'm saying I think that's his best chance. If you're going to see both the Rosses make it, it does come, in my opinion, at the expense of John for Richie and Justin for Watson.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I've seen John Ross. We've all seen John Ross play in the NFL, and he's been regulated to a practice squad guy for the last couple of seasons. He's just been unable to really do a ton. And, you know, injuries take that. Not having a full route tree will do it as well. And not really being a hugely versatile player, it does limit what you can do and as an effective player. Justin, I want him to be healthy. If he can get healthy, if he's fully healthy, ready to go, I know he's been practicing and doing routes with Mahomes down to Texas, and we've seen the clips from Sky Moore's video. I get all of that. I'm hoping before I even begin to think he makes the roster that he's healthy, he looks good, and he's not going to further hurt himself in the future. It just, he does all that, he will definitely have a chance to make the roster.
Yeah, I just seeing the number 7 at wide receiver makes me like, ooh, why 7? Again, they're not going to see the field a ton. But again, if you are that nervous that a dude's going to get stolen, if you're that nervous that a guy might get took, I guess it works. You know, I'm a fullback. Yep. If you have one guy, again, maybe it's Watson, who's basically a special teamer only. Maybe it's John Ross, who's a special teamer only. We'll see how the roster is constructed. Again, I can't find myself coming to 7. I will also point out a good point in the chat. I don't know who said that, actually, so I apologize. They said Tony has a history of injuries, long history of injuries already in his young career. If you're nervous that he might get injured again, you might want to keep 7 just in case.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that one.
All right, Harms, before I let you go, any final thoughts? What you're looking forward to? What's going on with you? Can be Chiefs related, can be, I don't know, food related. You're always cooking on your Twitter account.
I am always cooking. I do everything I can.
Legit cooking. He cooks with his film analysis, but he also actually cooks on his Twitter account.
Yeah, I love to, you know, I love to cook. I just recently, actually today, I made some ramen, and yesterday, actually 2 days ago, I did.
You know, but the kind you put in the microwave?
No,
ain't no way, ramen. My guy Harm just said, man, I love to cook. Just made some ramen.
Yeah, no, some real, actual, like Asian ramen. So from scratch, by the way. So yeah, I love doing all that, and right now, with the Chiefs, I'm looking forward to seeing the steps on defense. I believe this defense can be actually like a top 12 defense in the NFL. I fully believe that. Last year, they were a top half of the defense, weighted DVOA at the end of the season. Weighted DVOA means that they give more credence to the games that are played at the end of the season. So they were playing at a top half clip towards the end of the season. And they can keep that trajectory going up with all the young players they have. Hopefully, all of them take a step. And I want to see how they're going to look when, you know, Trent McDuffie continues to take steps forward. When maybe you use Nick Bolton less as a coverage linebacker and just let him be a run stopping guy. And you have a couple of Drew Tranquil and maybe Willie Gay that can be your pass coverage guys. So I'm very excited about what they could be defensively. And I hope they don't take a step back from sacks, you know, finishing second in the NFL with 55 last year. You know, it's hard to go above that. I think personally they can hit over 60 this year with everything that they've done. You're adding Felix, you know, you add Charles Omeniu, and you still have another year now with not just everything that they've done defensively with, you know, Chris Jones being there, but you have Joe Collin continuously improving guys like Mike Dana and the back end of that defensive end room. So I'm really excited about the defense this year. And that's something I've not said at all under Patrick Mahomes' led offense. So I think that's something that I'm really looking forward to seeing this year.
Yeah, I remember putting out on Twitter, I think this is going to be the best defense we have seen under Patrick Mahomes, or at least in the Patrick Mahomes era. I think I've also probably said that almost every single year since he got here, because it has progressively gotten better. But last year, I think I got to look back. I think I may have said they may have finished top 12. I think I said top 12. I think they barely snuck in the very end of the year to a top 12 defense. So I got to go back and find all the Bengals fans that just ripped into me. So I got to go back and find that just so I can rip into some people again. I keep those receipts.
You should.
Not really. I don't keep them at all because I would forget and I'm wrong a lot. So I don't want people keeping receipts on me. But Daniel, you're the man. Daniel Harms, make sure you follow him on Twitter at inharmsway19. extremely good analysis. Great friend of me personally, of this show, of Sports Radio 810, of everything I do. Harms has some of the best Chiefs takes out there. Even if we disagree, we do it in a respectful way.
We
go get barbecue and we argue at a Jack Stack and we get up and maybe some cheesy corn gets thrown.
Some beans end up where they're not supposed to. I don't know. Things happen.
Yeah, it happens. But guess what? We're still friends. That's what happens. Absolutely. So make sure you follow Daniel Harms on Twitter. Harms, anything coming up soon on your Twitter account? Anything you're dropping on RGR? What do you have coming up soon?
Tomorrow, I will be releasing my Trent McDuffie year in review. Last week was the George Karloftis. The week before that was Sky Moore. This week, it's Trent McDuffie. What I think his future holds, actually, what they did last year at the end of the season that I think might surprise some people with the future at their cornerback position. So Trent McDuffie film review coming over tomorrow on the RGR channel. And, you know, I'm working on something big on the defensive side too. Like I'm working on something collectively that will, I don't know when it's going to be dropping because I'm still collecting a lot of stats, but I'm working on that right now too.
For Daniel Harms, I am Sterling Holmes. This was the Arrowhead Addict Podcast. We are out.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.